Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയ ചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയുടെ പ്രഭുപാദയ്ക്ക് ജയം. നിത്യല പ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിപ്രജാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയുടെ പ്രഭുപാദയ്ക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരിഗോവർധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗരവ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ബോഡി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ബോഡി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ബോഡി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണ രഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം ഹരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാം സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാന്വിതാംശ്ച ഹേ കൃഷ്ണ കരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപീഷ ഗോപികാ കാന്ത രാധാ കാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ തപ്ത കാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസ്തുതേ ദേവീ പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ വാചകൽപദരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാ സിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാം അനുസന്ധനാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതവൽപനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണം പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാം പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രമേത്രൈകപാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഃഖാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹ വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാനൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാജയദ്രതജല ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതി കൃപേണ മഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുലാം അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനീ സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവാം പാലാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോത്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനക കേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാഭോദിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേവീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാ രഥപങ്കജം കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാ തമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യ ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർവേദൈ സംഗവദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഃ ഗോവിന്ദനാമസങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. Saturday we were talking about karma. The most complex subject in the Bhagavad Gita is this karma. People have tried to understand, and even in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, apart from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has tried to explain this, the science of karma. Because it is a science, and it is such a complex science, that many learned personalities, even Krishna says, are bewildered by the complexities of karma. And you will notice, you will find this mentioned in several other literature by the great authorities, acharyas also. Atyaya sakarani karma padalani. They say, if one can understand karma in detail, in depth, and one understands the intricacies of karma, he has understood everything, how this whole creation is going on. But so long as we don't understand karma, everything is bewildering to us. We are bewildered every time when we do not know how the karma works in this world. People sometimes often make this mistake also, because what they do is sometimes they read the books. When they read the books, they will find one verse somewhere. They'll read that verse and they will say that Prabhupada said this, that there is no karma for us, we are free from karma. This is one of the big mistakes what we make when we read literature like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Because they are so complicated to understand properly, we have to read it many, many times and should never make the mistake of picking up one verse from somewhere and saying that this is what it means and this is the conclusion. That is not the conclusion. To get to the conclusion, you have to read through from beginning to end many, many times, and chew it in your own mind and think about it in depth before some realization comes from that. This is the nature of the Shastras. Shastras by nature is like that. That is why this mistake of every time this happens, that people read the books, Prabhupada's books, and he says, Prabhupada says like this in these words, and then later on he finds entirely opposite to them, or exactly opposite to this, what he has read here. Then he says, Prabhupada is contradicting. He says he is contradicting this. So like this, our mind is so much into this black and white business that when anything becomes very subtle, it becomes very difficult for us. Either we say that it is not correct, or we say that it's not explained properly. But you can't do anything about it. It is just the way the laws of karma and the associated activities are. And therefore, Krishna also, while explaining this karma yoga, has taken extraordinary care in every single word what he has spoken in these verses. And the more and more you read and think about it and realize that it has a different perception than what you have thought it is or what you have read in the book. So that realization will come by continuously reflecting on it all the time and seeing from all angles why Krishna has spoken in this, and discussing with the other devotees also. So this is just one point I wanted to mention this in the beginning, because this issue is all the time coming up. People reading books and some one verse, they will find that Prabhupada says there is no karma, so I'm not affected by karma. And exactly after a few verses, they read Prabhupada says karma is the most important thing. So then there is contradiction. And those who have read the first verse, they will say, oh, I have no karma, no, not worry about anything. The person who has read the second verse, he says it's contradicting. So like this, it goes from one to another. So in order to understand this, in order to understand this science of karma, we have to give a lot of energy and time to think about it. And the reason why karma is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning itself, because this is the peculiarity of this earthly planet. It is where this particular activity is performed, called karma. And the only person who can explain karma is Krishna, no one else, because he is the personality who has created this science of karma, who has created earthly planet, who created the laws of karma here. And because of that, only he can explain it better, and he has done it in the most fascinating way in the Bhagavad Gita, giving sufficient food to think about for those who are thoughtful. So that's the nature of the Bhagavad Gita. So we were discussing last Saturday that what Krishna says there, that in the verse 17, karmanohyabhi bodhavyam, bodhavyancha vikarmana, akarmanascha bodhavyam, gahana karmanogari. Where Krishna says it's gahanam. Gahanam means it is very difficult. Krishna himself says, gahana karmanogari, it is very difficult to understand. Even when you present this science of karma to many people, they find there is some logic in it, but at the same time, when something happens in this world, they are totally perplexed about it. This is how you find the reactions from people. So this perplexion has come because lack of analysis of the science of karma. That is why it is. Gahana karmanogari. As I mentioned last time, that vidhi and nishedam, that means two things. One, what you are allowed to do, and the other one, what you are not allowed to do. What they call as do's and don'ts. That is how it is mentioned, do's and don'ts. So, this do's and don'ts is not possible to apply to everything in this world, that you can understand. Because every living entity in this world will act according to the different modes of nature. That is quite understandable, isn't it? According to the modes of nature, we all work. So, when you are under the modes of nature, it is not possible to precisely say how that particular person will react to the particular modes of nature he is in. So therefore, what the Shastras have done is, they have given a certain instruction that this is what you are allowed to do, which is the vidhi, and a certain instruction which you should not do, which is the nishedam. So vidhi and nishedam is mentioned there. And then after that, anything which does not fall into these two, vidhi and nishedam, or karmam and agarmam, they call it as vikarmam. It is categorized or classified into the category of vikarmam. So what vikarma means is anything that is not authorized by the shastram, that is not authorized by the scriptures, that is called vikarmam. So this vikarmam category, most of the things who operate in this world or who function in this world without taking into consideration of the shastram, without taking into consideration of the scriptures, they are generally, you can say, they are performing vikarma. So in other words, most of the activities of the modern world is under the category of vikarma. So this vikarma, Krishna says, is the cause of all your problems. Once you get into this vikarma, because you do not know how that will bounce back on you, what you have done. And in ignorance, just like a child, when the child is given something to play with, he just smashes it around and does what he wants with it. Similarly, without knowing how the laws of karma works in this world, we function in this world without caring for anything, the result will be that we will have to pay a heavy price for it because of our own ignorance and our lack of understanding of the laws of material nature. So that is why here in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is trying to explain this a little bit more in detail. So we think a little bit deeper, and we, by thinking about it, some realization will come from that, so that when we function in this world, we be a bit careful about it, not to go beyond the limit, to do things which are not properly authorized by the Shastra. So in this example, I was telling you this last Saturday, that there are things which are difficult. For example, just to give a few examples. Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, Lakshmana, Sita Devi, they were all together traveling in the forest. So when they came to a particular place, they came to Vasishtha Maharshi's ashram. If you remember, this is happening in Traidavigam, Vasishtha Maharshi's ashram. So in Vasishtha Maharshi's ashram, they were staying there. And after a few days, Vasishtha Maharshi went missing. They couldn't find him, where he was. So one day Ramachandra says to Lakshmana, where is Vasishtha Maharshi gone? We have been here for a few days. Where is he gone now? Go and find out where he is. So Lakshmana, they are in the deep forest. Lakshmana went looking for Vasishtha Maharshi. So when he went looking for Vasishtha Maharshi,
at some point he saw him sitting with some people in the forest who were practically the people who lived in that forest, naturally, which means that their habits were very different. You can imagine these Ramchandra, Lakshmana, they have come from the royal palace of Ayodhya. And they were princes, and they were advanced in their way of life, every way. They were cultured, they were civilized, they were not ordinary people. So, but when they were in the forest, they saw these forest dwellers who lived in the forest. They had a completely different nature. They ate anything they wanted, and they were not very civilized in many ways, in other words. So Lakshmana saw Vasishtha Maharshi sitting with them, and they were cooking something in the fire, and they were all eating. And they offered some of it to Vasishtha Maharshi also. And Vasishtha Maharshi was also eating along with them. So Lakshmana saw all this and came up to a sage, Vasishtha, and told him, Ramachandra is waiting there to see you because we were concerned that where you have gone. Vasishtha Maharshi immediately said goodbye to all those people and came back with Lakshmana to see Ramachandra. When they came back to Ramachandra's, to the sage's ashram, Vasishtha's Maharshi Arundhati was there in the ashram. So as soon as Vasishtha Maharshi got back, he became very strict about his eating, about his life in the ashram, everything. So Lakshmana asked Vasishtha, why this change? I didn't see you so strict about everything when you were with those people in the forest. But now that you have come here, you have become suddenly so strict. So in answer to that, there is in the book called Yoga Vasishtham. In there, Vasishtha Maharshi says to Lakshmana that these rules and regulations in the Shastram is not something which is so black and white. In other words, one has to learn how to apply them in life. Otherwise, what will happen is, so you go on a pilgrimage, you went to Badrinath or Kedarnath, somewhere like that, and there is not sufficient facility to bathe. There is no possibility due to the weather conditions or whatever it is. You are on a pilgrimage, and you have got accustomed to bathing all the time when you are living in a city where you had a proper bathroom and facilities like that. So when you go on traveling, does that mean that you can't travel to such places? No, it's not. You still travel. But according to the circumstances, you have to adjust also your way of life. That is necessary. You can't avoid that. Similarly, eating habits also, sometimes it may not be possible that if you have taken a vow that I will only eat prasadam from the manor, nowhere else. And if I go on traveling on pilgrimage, and it may become very difficult, which means traveling may be very difficult for you. So sometimes we have to make some concessions, adjustments in our own life. And that adjustments depends on how, in what circumstances, purpose for which you are traveling, and conditions under which you are traveling, and so on and so forth. So many things we have to take into account. So this is called the difficulty in recognizing vidhi and nishedam, or in understanding the what is allowed and what is not allowed, and how to apply that in one's own life. For example, in deity worship, there is a thing called Salagram Shila, which you have seen at the temple, right in front of the deities they have kept, Salagram Shila. Now this Salagram Shila is worshipable because Vishnu is present in that Salagram Shila all the time. It comes from Nepal, near the Gandaki River. That is where the Salagram Shila is picked, and that's where the Salagram Shila is brought to the temple. And because Vishnu, in the Padmapuranam, it mentions that Salagram Shila has Vishnu's presence there, so people worship Salagram Shila. Now, according to Vedic custom, if there is a difficulty in when some place is impure, for example, particularly the deity worship, where the place becomes impure due to some reason, there is a number of procedures how to purify the place. That is known as punyaham. That means the purificatory processes to purify the place, to purify the people who are involved in the deity worship, and to purify the articles. There are a number of procedures for that in the deity worship process. But Salagram Shila is concerned, none of this apply. What they say is, if Salagram Shila has become impure due to any reason, all you have to do is to go and dip it in the water and bring it back. that's purified. Because by nature itself it's pure. It cannot be contaminated. So how these differences come? If Salagram Shila also is a Shila, it's a stone. If that becomes pure simply by dipping into the water, whereas the deity whom you are worshipping very seriously, if an offense happens, or if some impure things happens in the temple, say for example, so many things are there in the Shastram, you will find some death happens in the temple room, or someone becomes impure, or a child passes urine, or something like that. If these things happen, the deities are impure, and there is a process of how to purify the deity worship process. So one rule apply to Salagram, one rule apply to deity. Why is this? This is again this Vidhi Nishedam, that it is difficult to say, and it is difficult to say that this is the right thing and this is the wrong. For that particular thing, that is right. For this particular thing, this is also right. So like this, Vidhi and Nishedam is mentioned all over the Shastra. And Krishna says there that if you get absorbed in this to such an extent that you may find it very difficult to know everything in relationship with life. It is not only applied to deity worship, it even applies to everything in life. This Vidhi and Nishedam is there. So that's what Krishna says, Ghana Karmanogari, that is very, very difficult to know. As I mentioned last Saturday, that chanting the holy name, for example, if you chant the holy name, we say sometimes to people, at least chant once. Or when we say that somebody who is not very receptive to chanting, we tell them, chant Hare Krishna. We tell them like this, chant Hare Krishna, we will say to him. He doesn't know anything about what is Hare Krishna, what he is chanting. But just to please you, he is chanting. He just says, okay, Hare Krishna, he'll say to you. Reply back to you, right? But on the other hand, in the 10 offenses, it's also mentioned there that you should chant free from any material attachment and fully attentive while chanting. It's one of the offenses. So does that mean that man has committed an offense because he was not attentive while chanting? He has just chanted because you have told him to chant. That's why. So you can see why the differences in the two different places, two different ways it is mentioned. This is again coming from Vidhi Nishedam. Now that is what it says there, that there's a thing called Arthavadam. Arthavadam means that in order to encourage people, to those who are totally non-receptive to spiritual life, you have to show some compassion to them also. Because it's only due to ignorance that people cannot take to spiritual life. Merely the cause is ignorance. It's ignorance that is driving them. And when one is ignorant, you cannot do anything about it. Tamogunam is very deep-seated in their consciousness. And when it's like that, no matter how much you tell them, they will still think that this world is wonderful. Let me enjoy my life here. All this is Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is all... It's all some story somebody has built up, and not many people are following it in this world, so why should I take it seriously? This kind of understanding, this is the complete manifestation of tamogunam in a person. So for such people, all you can do to them is to somehow or the other bring them to this process by little, that's all you can do. Many, many instances, Prabhupada said many, many things. Now, sometimes devotees will take that this is absolute and start saying, Prabhupada said like this, so this is correct, it's absolute. So, no, Shastram and Prabhupada says many things from the Shastram. And those things what has been spoken from the Shastram is the absolute thing. The other things what Prabhupada has spoken in order to encourage the people to take to spiritual life, that is sometimes is Arthavadam. So that you have to learn all the time how to apply that in different situations. And this application is necessary, otherwise what will happen is you will get into problems with people. You will start arguing, holding on to something, saying that this has been spoken like this, so this must be my right, you are wrong, you can say to them. And that approach will not be very good because it will disturb the faith of the person who is listening to. Everything has to be based on Shastram. Shastram is the authority. Yes, Shastra Vidimul Srijyam. Vartade kama karanaval. Krishna says in the end of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Ya shastram vidimul srajyam vartade kama karanaval. And then one who acts based on shastram, alone, Shastram alone, is acting properly. Otherwise, it will cause the dutu based on lusty desires. But at the same time, one is allowed to encourage others to bring to Krishna consciousness in order to engage them in spiritual life. Sometimes it is spoken, certain things are spoken also to help the person to understand things. And also, sometimes you bring people to spiritual life and they take to it, and after a while they realize it. When the tamogunam goes away, because by chanting, what happens is the tamogunam little by little goes away. And when he chants, and little bit desire comes to read something, he reads the book, and when he reads, sometimes by his good fortune, some things comes to his mind that I should look a little bit more deeper into this. This is how that spiritual life grows in a person's heart. And when he grows, what you have done to him is not a wrong thing. After all, you have done to him with a good intention to bring him into the Shastram, into the Krishna consciousness. So the intention is good, and therefore the action is also justified. So that is how it is like that. So many instances you will find in this. Srimad Bhagavatam, there is so many places where, like we said when before, Ajamila chanted Hare Krishna, Narayana's name. Narayana's name was chanted at the time of death. Now, if I hold on to that and keep saying to people that Ajamila chanted once the name Narayana at the age of 88, so I will also chant when I am 88, once I'm going to chant Narayana. And if I take that approach, then that's not proper understanding of the holy name. That's not the proper understanding of holy name. And not only that, to make the verse complicated, Ajamila also had been with a prostitute for many years. So if we start saying that, let me enjoy my life also in that way. And at 88, when Ajamila, because I'm following the Shastra strictly, that's not following Shastra. This is where the difficulty comes, that one has to understand the essence of everything. Without understanding the essence, simply reading it black and white and start taking things and discussing on that basis, that will not help. That is why it's necessary to think and again reflect on these things and discuss with others also who have realizations on this. This is the maturity that comes from the studying Shastra. So, coming back to this verse, Gahana Karmanogari, Krishna says here that there is a number of examples actually in the relationship to this. Shastra will tell you many, many things. For example, Shastra says that you should live in a place where there is deer, deer roams around, because such places are meant for good for sacrifice. For example, generally, even in India, they'll say that the land between Ganga River and Yamuna River, which is known as Aryavartham, that is the land specifically meant for performing sacrifices. It mentions like that. And that place is the most suited for human habitation or human life. Does that mean those who cannot live there cannot practice spiritual life? It doesn't mean that. It means that this place has these advantages. Whereas the people, say, who are coming from Rajasthan in India, or even part of Gujarat, which is completely desert, as far as Shastra is concerned, is not good for human life, because there is no facilities for growing plants and good trees, fruits and things like that, and many things which are necessary for performing sacrifices and for spiritually minded people. It is not congenial for those places. But that does not mean that because you are born there, what do you do? Does that mean you pack and bag everything and go to places where it's only suitable? The whole world has to come to only one land then, only one piece available for that. So that is not what it is meant. Shastra says that these places are good for performing sacrifices, and places which are not meant in that way, they can be executed still. Spiritual life can be performed there. It is not forbidden. It's not forbidden to do that. It is called, deers are called Krishnamargam. Krishnamargam, presence of Krishnamargam is necessary for performing sacrifices. That. So, based on the time, based on the place, based on the performer, based on the circumstances, all these rules and regulations can vary. It can change. It's not something very black and white. You can't apply this all over the world under all conditions. The do's and don'ts are not like that. They are based on place, time and circumstances and the person who is performing that. It is the duty of the acharya to adjust things according to the circumstances when he is presenting Krishna consciousness at different parts of the world. You can see how Prabhupada adjusted many things in his own preaching activities. He had to do that. He did not follow strictly what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told Prabhupada to do, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was preaching in a particular group of people in a particular area, and Prabhupada was preaching to another group of people in another area. So many things he had to adjust according to the conditions. And that way we have to see all these injunctions. Vedic injunctions you have to see like that. But certain injunctions you have to follow under all conditions. Certain injunctions you have to adjust according to the circumstances. So we were talking about in this topic what is known as Panchagni Vidya. Panchagni Vidya means there are five things I mentioned where the spirit soul is caught up, especially the living entities, human body, human soul, or people like us, all the human body, human living entities. What are they? I mentioned before on the Samashti form and the Veshti form. Samashti means in an expanded form. For example, when you have a sea or a big ocean, it is Samashti. If you take a drop out of that, it's called Veshti. So Veshti and Samashti. One, something which is in the miniature form and something in the large expanded form. So in qualities, both are the same. But as far as the quantity is concerned, one is much bigger, the other one is much smaller. So similarly, in this creation also, everything is like that. You have to very critically analyze this, and then you will understand that what Shastra says is absolutely true. Take for example, when the soul is moving around in this world, not only the earthly planet I'm talking about, the soul has a much larger area while it is engaged in karma in this world, and that is known as karma mandala. When you are engaged in karma here, it has a much larger, wider area of operation for that to function. And that is called in the Gayatri Mantra, when you chant Bhulogam, Bhuralogam, Surlogam. So these three logam, Bhulogam, Bhuralogam and Surlogam, Surlogam, is the place of operation or the area within which the spirit soul is moving up and down. It performs karma in this world, it goes up and goes to the heavenly planets to enjoy if the activities were good. Performs pious activities there and comes back here again after the pious results are finished. And then if he performs sinful activities, he loses this gross body, and then he gets another lower body according to the severity of his sinful activities. So gross pious activities goes up, sinful activities come down. And then in between, in the human body, he floats in this earthly planet. So these three planets together, Bhulogam, Bhurlogam and Sorlogam, all three things together, along with, he has got only two choices in this. What are they? One is the male form and the other one is the female form. Human body has got these two forms, isn't it? Male form and female form. Now, what is interesting is, these three planets, these three phases, Bhulogam, Bhurlogam, Sorlogam, and these two, male form and female form, these five things is that which controls the soul here when it is conditioned. When the soul is conditioned, these five things controls the soul. How does it control? For example, in the female form, it's always desiring to have an association with the male. In the male form, it's always desiring to have an association with the female. Pumstvam and Stritvam, that is how it is called. Apart from that, in its function, in the karmam, when it is executing, it goes up and down in these three planets, in these three worlds, or you can say Bhulogam, Bhurlogam and Surlogam. So these five things, Bhulogam, Bhurlogam, Surlogam, male and female, these five things are called Panchagnis, the five fires. And the technique of using it to get out of it is called Panchagni Vidya, or the technology of releasing oneself from this cycle. Is called Panchagni Vidya. It is a very famous in the Vedic literature, particularly in the Karmakandam. Karmakandam is completely based on this Panchagni Vidya. And generally when one is a brahmachari, I'm talking about, this is the tradition in the ancient tradition of the Vedic culture, was that during the brahmachari life, when one goes to the teacher, to the spiritual master in the Gurukulam, what he learns is, first he begins with this Karmakandam. And it is Karmakandam that is learned for a long time. And what does he learn? He learns about this, how to work with these five things in his grahastha life. That is what she learns during the Brahmachari Ashram in the Karmakandam. So Panchagni Vidya is a major part of the Karmakandam, and many, many sacrifices and which are mentioned in the Karmakandam is in relationship with this Panchagni Vidya, which is also called as Agnihotram. So you will notice many, many Brahminical people who are coming from the Brahminical tradition, they are identified with the Agnihotris. They are called Agnihotris because they executed Agnihotram in their, or Panchagni Vidya in their life before. And there were many, many learned Brahmana families who continued this tradition for a very, very long time. That is, throughout the history it has been existent. And so this Panchagni Vidya is important. Now, how do we get out, understand this? Now, as I mentioned, these five things, they are called the Samashti form. Samashti form means the total form of that. Now, the same thing, it exists in us, in the human body. What is present, everything what is in this creation is present in us. And only what is present in us is present in the creation also. This is how you have to relate us with the creation. The creation, what is in the creation is within us. What is within us is in the creation. Take for example five material elements. It is these five material elements, earth, water, air, ether and fire, that is present in us and that is present in the whole creation also. In addition to that, what else is present? There is, for example, the Swarlokam, what I mentioned before. That Swarlokam is the Samashti form, and the Vyashti form or the miniature form is our intelligence. Is the intelligence. Similarly, the moon, the Bhuvarlokam is the Vyashti form of the is a Vyashti form. The Bhuvarlokam is the Samashti form, and the mind is the Vyashti form of the Bhuvarlokam. And the third thing, the Bhuvilokam or earthly planet, its Vyashti form is this material body, the gross body, what we have. So you can see the gross body, the mind, the intelligence. Bhuvilokam, Bhuvarlokam, Swarlokam. One is the Vyashti form, the other one is the Samashti form. So there is a relationship like that. Now, what else? In addition to that, what you have got is that what drives the, there is a driving energy behind these two. For example, if you take the Swarlokam, the topmost one, the Swarlokam is driven by the sun planet. Whereas at the same time, what is the Vyashti form of that, which is the intelligence, that is driven by the soul. Bhagavad Gita also says that, if you remember, that Indriyani Pararahu, Indriyabhi Paramana, Manasastu Parabuddhi, Buddhistu Paradastusa, that above buddhi, above intelligence is the soul. The soul is driving the intelligence. Yeah. So similarly, if you look into the to the Bhuvarlokam, the second one, the first one is you have got already Swarlokam, the sun planet which drives that, the intelligence, the Vyashti form. And just like Dhyulokam or Swarlokam is driven by the sun planet, buddhi is also driven by another thing. Buddhi is also driven by the soul. Soul drives the, this is the driving energy behind the intelligence. Similarly, if you come into the lower levels, into the Bhuvarlokam, you will also find Bhuvarlokam is driven by the moon. Whereas the moon planet or the mind is driven by the false ego. Mind is driven by the false ego. And then you come to the third lower level, which is the Bhuvalokam, it's the earthly planet and the gross body. These two don't have any driving force because they are dead matter. Both the earthly planet as well as the material body, they are dead matter. So there is no driving force, energy for them, unlike the intelligence and the mind. So you can see what this mean by Vyashti and Samashti and how they are related to the mind, intelligence and the gross body. I suppose it's a bit clear, isn't it? I don't know. I don't know how to explain it more because it's a very Agnihotram is a very complicated topic, and also once you want to know more about it, there are so many books available and you have to read through and talk about it with people who have a lot more deeper practiced it in life. Because we haven't practiced it, it's difficult to get a feel for it, what it meant. Anyway, I'll continue with this because it is an important thing. Then after this, what happens is that you see the soul in this body, when it is in the gross body like this, it stays in three states, isn't it? I mentioned that before. That is easy to understand. Jagrat, Sopnam and Sushupti, which is dream state, deep sleep and wakened state. Wakened state is Jagrat, dream state is Sopnam and deep sleep is Sushupti, isn't it? So the soul, when it is passing through these three states up and down, it is in its Veshti form. Soul is in its Veshti form. But as soon as it's released from this body, where does it go? It goes into the Samashti form. That means it starts traveling between these three planets, Bhulogam, Borlogam and Sorlogam. So you can see, when it is controlled by the gross body, it travels in the Jagrat, Sopnam, Sushupti, three states. As soon as it's released, it goes to Bhulogam, Borlogam, Sorlogam. That means in the Veshti form, it stays in the gross body in three states. In the Samashti form, it stays in these three planets. That is how that relationship is. And these three states of existence, Jagrat, Sopnam and Sushupti, is also, we call it as Sthulam, Sushmam and Karanam. That means gross, subtle and deeper than that. Much more subtle than that. Sushma and Karanam, which is the causal body that is referred to like that. So that is another side to it, to think about it. Now, what is Panchagni Vidya? Panchagni Vidya means that we all heard this name called Havan. Havan means performing a sacrifice, isn't it? Fire sacrifice. That's how generally Havan is the word used in Shastra. So in Havan, what you offer into the Havan is called Havis. That means like the ghee you offer into the fire. When you offer the ghee into the fire, it burns, isn't it? So the Havis is the one that keeps the Havan going. So Havis is the ghee and Havan is the fire. So similarly, these five things are considered to be the five fires, what I mentioned. That is the intelligence, the mind, the gross body, and the female form and the male form. That means that is the Veshti form of these five fires, the Veshti form. The Samashti form is Bhulogam, Borlogam, Surlogam, male and female. Male and female is same in both, in Veshti and Samashti. But the other three changes. One side it is Bhulogam, Borlogam, Surlogam, and the other side it is gross body, material body, mind and intelligence. Okay. Now you got two sets, five of each. So if you take the Veshti form, say for example the intelligence, mind, gross body, male form and female form. These five things, this is the Veshti form of Panchagni. So what is done is normally that these are considered to be five fires. I mentioned why it's called fire, because if you understand these five fires and if you train your life or if you practice your life, develop life based on the understanding of this Agnihotram, philosophy of Panchagni Vidya, then that will purify your karma. It will purify your karma. That is the way to come. The goal of all this is to come out of karmam somehow. You are caught up in this network of called karmam. And how to come out of it, that is what this whole philosophy is about. So this Panchagni Vidya is a process by which you can free yourself from the bondage of karma. That is why it's given such an important place in the Karmakanda. So while performing these five things, what I mentioned here for Panchagni, what do they do? What they do is actually, what is the effect of fire on us? Fire is used as something to cook, isn't it? You cook in the fire so that it is consumable. It can be accepted for consumption. Whether it is food or whether it is iron, it doesn't matter. Iron also, you do the same thing. You heat it in the fire and then you can work on the iron. You can do what you want to do with it. So similarly, the soul also requires a certain amount of treatment, heat treatment like thing. And this heat treatment is this Panchagni Vidya for the soul. How you do the heat treatment is through these five fires you send the soul through. The soul is going through these five fires all the time. And if you understand these fires properly, and if you understand the havis that is offered into the fire, and if you live your life based on this understanding, that becomes Agnihotram or Panchagni Vidya. And that is the principle behind this Karmakandam. So what is normally done is, for example, these five things, take for example buddhi, is intelligence, the mind, and this material body, and male form and female form, the five things. And what is the havis, what is offered into this? For buddhi, it is shraddha. Shraddha means the attention, what you give into this. Then for the next one is the mind. For the mind, it is the nectar, it is called amrit. Amrit is the offering to the mind. Then for the material body, this gross body, shariram, what it is referred to, it is called varsham. So, varsham is what is the havis for the material body. Then for the male form of the body, it is referred to as the annam or the food. And then the last one, for stri form or the female form, it is called rethas. So five things you will find there that buddhi, which is intelligence, then the mind, then the gross body, and the male form and the female form. And the female form. In there, you got these five offerings into it. For the buddhi, which is intelligence, the offering is shraddha. For the mind, for the mind, the offering is amrit. For the body, it is varsham. For the male form, it is annam, and for the female form, it is rethas. Let us look at it, what it means actually. So if you take buddhi, intelligence, if the intelligence is, what does intelligence is? Intelligence means that whatever you feed into intelligence is able to chew it, because everyone has been given this intelligence to chew it properly. Now, if you fill this intelligence with information related to matter, related to material world and matter, what will happen is you will continuously increase your material existence. This is the nature of the intelligence. This is the reason why it is said that in order to advance spiritually, on the spiritual side, you have to feed the intelligence not with material knowledge, rather with spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, what will happen is, if you pour more and more ghee into the fire will burn better and better, isn't it? It grows in much larger scale. Similarly, if you pour more and more material consciousness or material way of life, material thoughts into your intelligence, that intelligence will grow more and more on a material level. Material consciousness will get stronger. And with the result will be that more and more ignorance will develop inside. Avidya. Avidya is the result of that. Avidya means what? Material, increase the material existence. Samsaram. Samsaram means material existence. Your material existence will increase by doing that. So therefore, this first thing, havis, what is known as Shraddha, if it is not controlled properly, it will develop into ignorance. If it is controlled properly, it will develop into knowledge. You can see how that can happen. This Shraddha or attention, how much attention or how much information you feed into the intelligence, accordingly, the intelligence will grow or intelligence will come down. Intelligence's growth means intelligence will grow in the material level, and once it goes in that direction, it will become materially very vibrant, but spiritually it will become very dull. It will not be able to understand what is spiritual life. These are very subtle things of the human body, and Krishna has explained this, and in the Vedic tradition these are very important factors, and this is the reason why material knowledge has been given a second place in this spiritual way of life. Because if you understand, try to advance on the material path, it will affect your spiritual life very seriously. So you have to check it very strongly by controlling your intelligence, number one. Number two, if you come to the mind, more or less like the intelligence. It's not much different. What is the nature of the mind? Nature of the mind is always to call what is known as in Shastram is Sangalpam and Vikalpam. Sangalpam means that it will, as soon as it gets something, some message from the intelligence, because it comes from the intelligence, it feeds into the mind. Mind starts working on it, pondering through it, and looking at it, is this the right thing, that's the right thing, this way, that way, this way, that way. This is mind. That's why it's called Sangalpam and Vikalpam. So the Sangalpam and Vikalpam has to go from the mind. Only when it goes, it is purified enough to, the mind goes away from that. But if you increase by feeding into this Amrit, what is called the Havis for the mind, if you increase that, what will happen is the mind will be so absorbed in the material consciousness and material way of life that it will not allow you, it will not give you that peace of mind what is necessary for you to develop the spiritual consciousness. This is the reason why in the ancient times, all the great sages, you will find, they went to the forest. Why did they go to forest? Because they did not want to disturb their intelligence or the mind with such useless thoughts, which they consider as useless. Because just to maintain this human body, if you have to spend all your life just maintaining this body, that's not a very profitable proposition as far as the sages are concerned. Sages wanted to achieve something in this life before this body drops off from once for all. So that's why the concept was so different, that they stayed aloof from everything. And you will also find in the Bhagavad Gita, in several instances, Krishna mentions in this, Vivikta desha sevitum aradarjana samsadi. Too much association with people, too much association with materialistic people and materialistic activities will not help to advance spiritually. So you have to keep a certain distance from them. But it's not possible always to run away from everything. But at least to some extent, if one can maintain a certain distance from, that will help the spiritual, that thought process will change. At the moment, our mind in intelligence is very external. It is going in all directions. But when one becomes thoughtful, it becomes internal. That is called Andarmukhatam. Andarmukhatam means to start thinking, seeing things in the from a different angle. Like you will see one thing, when the great, great personalities, sages, when they fall into distress, they don't go outside looking for solution. Have you noticed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Ramayana and all, you will find Vedavyas was put into a lot of distress at one time. He did not go out looking for a solution. He sat there and thought about it. Why? Because they have developed this habit of analyzing things, and they will come to the, they have learned the way of talking to the super soul inside and finding the answer to the problem. That is called Andarmukhatam, looking inwards. We are all Bahirmukhatam, externally looking. All the time, our mind senses everything outside. We don't know what is inside. We think there is nothing there, so we go out looking for all the solution to problems, running here, running there, everywhere. But that doesn't bring the answer. So, coming to this, the mind has got, the Havis is called Amrit. Then the next one is material body, Shariram. Shariram, what happens? Shariram, the Havis is Varsham. Havis is Varsham. Varsham means what you provide for this body. If you provide a lot of sense gratification to this body, what will happen is this body will not be capable of executing spiritual life. That is the result of that. It will not be able to execute spiritual life. That is why Varsham is called. Varsham means this providing sense gratification to the gross body. So if the gross body engages in excessive sense gratification, what will happen is that the gross body cannot take anymore anything. It loses its vitality or strength to absorb the spiritual principles. So that is, so if you minimize it, your spiritual life will get better. If you increase it, ignorance will develop very strongly. Tamogunam will develop in the human body. So you have to take care of that. Then the other two things, male and female form. For the male, the thing is called Anam. The Havis is Anam. And for the female, it is called Retasa. Anam means, what's happening is, in the male form, what happens to us is, as much as the bodily concept gets stronger in the male body, pride and arrogance also builds up. Pride and arrogance also builds up. So, in order to keep it to the lower level, to free from this false ego of pride and ego, one has to control that by controlling the food, what you are providing for that, so that you don't allow yourself to develop or strengthen the bodily concept of life in the male form. If you do that, if you increase the bodily identification by becoming stronger and healthier and fitter, and what we see all the time, people try to make their physical body as strong as possible. But it may be good for material sense enjoyment, it may help you. But from the spiritual point of view, you should not allow your gross body to engage too far in that direction, because you need to have the control on that gross body in order that the ignorance don't build up in the body. Similarly, the last thing, what is known as the female form, there it is called Retasa. Retasa means semen. Semen is that word, translation is semen, the Retas. Why it is called like that? Because the female body needs that to complete the procreation inside the semen. So, but this principle is based on understanding that if you develop that concept very strongly in your mind, what will happen is that lot of material desires will start building up inside. You see, when a living entity comes to this world, as soon as it's born, it is in ignorance, total ignorance. Because it has no samskar, no purificatory processes, it comes in and then it starts its life in this world. At different stages, it develops different kinds of material desires. Now, if you do not control it, these material desires, what will happen is, you will waste all your lifetime in fulfilling these material desires. In other words, eventually you will get entangled in the karma and bondage will happen. So, these five things what I mentioned, that is the intelligence, the mind, this gross body, the male form, the female form, the five fires, and the five havis, or the offering to these five fires, namely the shraddha, which is for the intelligence, amrit for the amrit for the mind, and varsham for the body, and annam for the male form, and retas for the female form. These things, if they are controlled properly, this veshti form will stay under control. And this process by which you control these things together is called Panchagni Vidya. That is called Panchagni Vidya. So, normally what is done is, through Shastram, the spiritual master teaches the disciple during his brahmachari life how to understand this in depth in every stage in life, and train him from the early days itself so that his mind is under control, intelligence is under control, body is under control, and the pride and arrogance is not built up inside, all the material desires are controlled. So you can see, a person who has such a consciousness, he has a possibility of releasing himself from the entanglement of karma. That is how it is. So that's the reason this Panchagni Vidya is given importance. Now, this is in the Veshti form. This is called Yajanam. Yajanam means to perform this Panchagni Vidya in life, throughout life, Brahmachari life. If you do that throughout Brahmachari life, when you come to householder life, you won't have a problem. You will, because if you have if the man is controlled properly in the Brahmachari life, in the householder life, all these unwanted desires won't build up. For example, nowadays when one gets married, the first thing starts in a large scale, how can I gratify my senses? That is how the planning starts from there. And that plan goes on till the day of retirement. He is working on this principle. Get more money, buy this, buy that, shopping, endless shopping. And still, there's no place to keep what you have shopped all the time. And it comes to that stage, and you look at it all the time, all the things what you have accumulated in all your life, and you realize this, none of them is useful to you. Most of it is totally useless. This cable, that cable, this thing, that thing. So many things you buy. Why? Because so much desires inside. As soon as you walk around, and the society is also really, buy this. There's a sale going on here, there's another sale going on there. So you're running after all these things whole life. Nothing you are gaining from this. At the end, you have worked all your life to buy all these things from the shop and bring it home and keep looking at it all the time and feel happy with it. Is this life? Do you call this as life? No. Panchayati Vidya is saying to you that come out of all this ignorance what you are in, and to get this understanding is necessary to practice it from the early days in life, that you don't develop this kind of mentality from the very beginning. Control everything so that if it is under control, these desires won't disturb you. But once the desires start building up, then you can't do anything. You are completely victimized by that. You are waiting for the sale to start. And then you are there in the queue, standing there 8-10 hours in front of Harrods to get what you want. Maybe 10 pounds you are saving here or 10 pounds. Whatever it is, this is human nature, ordinary people, I'm saying. But the Panchayatni Vidya was meant so that people don't fall into this net, into this this entanglement. Oh, that is why they were prevented from that. So in order to get that consciousness, one has to constantly strive for that. So this is Panchayat, and this is what is called Karma Yoga in the Vedas. I mentioned this before. This Panchayatni Vidya, if it is trained properly, the people who did that, they are for executing Karma Yoga properly. But Krishna knew that this is not possible for the people in the Kali Yuga. They cannot execute Karma Yoga in this way, knowing well our situation. Our situation, I don't know what to say about it. Actually, our way of life and our way of thinking and whatever we are trying to achieve in this world, I don't know what that is, because nobody knows what they want in this world. So the difficulty comes here that in order to do all these things, a lot of samskars or purificatory processes one has to go through. I mentioned before, generally in the olden days for brahmanas there are 40 samskars, 40. 40 samskars were to be performed for them. If they have gone through these 40 samskars, normally they will be so controlled in their mind and senses, there is no question of being driven by the material energy. Material energy can't touch them. They will be so pure and free from all the all such desires. But when it is not like that, especially our modern society, we have a great problem because we don't have these samskars, what were done in those days. And not only that, the whole Brahminical element is missing in the modern society. Everyone is considered to be a Shudra. So because of our qualities and our way of life today, we can never make any claim to anywhere near the Brahminical qualities. Our qualities are so poor in us because we don't have the samskars in us, nor we have the capacity to control our life to such a finer extent. So therefore, Krishna introduced Karma Yoga in the Bhagavad Gita in a different way. What Krishna said that, keeping the same principles, purification is the goal at the end. So what Krishna said was that you have to work in this world. You cannot stop working because Krishna has created karma for everybody. Once you come to this earthly planet, you have to do something. You cannot even sit quiet 1 minute. By the hand will go this way, leg will go that way. This way, that way, we'll keep moving. Mind will go take you somewhere else. So karmam you can't avoid. Karmam is inherent in us. That is unavoidable. Krishna also says that you can't free yourself from that because I have put you into this world of karma. Once you have come here, you have to accept it. But, and what is the result of karmam? Every karmam has its result, which is called phalaswarupam. Phalaswarupam means every karmam is followed by its result. So karmam and its result, these two things go side by side. Krishna says, bring me in the middle of that. If you bring Krishna between karmam and the result of the karmam, what will happen is, everything what you do it for Krishna, to please Krishna. And everything that comes from Krishna, that comes from the work, from the result, whatever you have done, you offer it to Krishna. In this way, you can free yourself from the karma. This is the Karma Yoga principle in the Bhagavad Gita. That is what Prabhupada calls it as Karma Yoga here, action in Krishna consciousness. So this action Krishna consciousness is this Karma Yoga, where Krishna is in the middle, Krishna is in the center. On the one side, you are executing your activities to please Krishna. And at the same time, whatever the results that is coming from that, you are offering to Krishna. If you function in that way, your life is pure. Then the results cannot touch you. I mentioned this before. The two major problem with karma is this. It develops, I am the doer. This thought will come. It's very difficult to get out of it. Anyone, no matter who it is. And I am the enjoyer. These are the two drawbacks of karma. So I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. These two things have to go from one in order to become free oneself from the karma, the cycle of karma. So in order to do that, Krishna says, keep me in the middle and do your work, what you have to do for me. So that is why in this verse you will find that in this particular verse, this side of Karmakandam is discussed a little bit to tell us it is a very complex thing. It is not an easy thing. And while executing, even when you cannot make simpler than this, Krishna has made it as simple as possible. There are many, many versions of the Panchagni Vidya of the Vedic Karmakandam, Karma Yogam in the Vedas by different people. But no one else has succeeded like the way Krishna has presented Karma Yogam in the Bhagavad Gita. That is the beauty of this Bhagavad Gita in the Karma Yogam. Only Krishna alone can do that, because Krishna says that bring me into it and let me be the center. If Krishna is in the center and if your all your activities are centered around Krishna, there is no possibility of you getting affected by your own karma. Otherwise, you are back into the same cycle as anybody else in this world is. So, in order to enlighten us, in order to make us realize the seriousness of the karma, Krishna goes on talking from there further about this in the next few verses. കർമ്മണ്യകർമ്മയേ പശ്യേൽ അകർമ്മണി ചകർമ്മയ സബുദ്ധിമാൻ മനുഷ്യേഷു സയുക്ത കൃഷ്ണകർമ്മകൾ. അനദർ ഡിഫിക്കൽട്ട് വേർഡ്സ് ടു അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ്. കർമ്മണി അകർമ്മണേ പശ്യേൽ അകർമ്മണി ചകർമ്മയ സബുദ്ധിമാൻ മനുഷ്യേഷു സയുക്ത കൃഷ്ണകർമ്മകൾ. ഇഫ് യു റീഡ് ദ ട്രാൻസ്ലേഷൻ ഓഫ് ദാറ്റ് വേർഡ്സ് യു വിൽ ഫൈൻഡ് ശ്രീല പ്രോബദ് മെൻഷൻസ് ദേ വൺ ഹു സീസ് ഇൻ ആക്ഷൻ ഇൻ ആക്ഷൻ ആക്ഷൻ ഇൻ ഇൻ ആക്ഷൻ is intelligent among men and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Now, if you say this to somebody, what will they say? If you see action in inaction, inaction in action, and one who is intelligent among men, Krishna Prabhupada says, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. I think that's enough for you to... to get confused. What does it all mean? Action in inaction, inaction in action. That is where we have to follow the great authorities on the acharyas, on the shastra. What it means is, karmanya karma ye pashyel, akarmanija karmaya, sa buddhiman manushyeshu, sayukta krishna karmakal. Karmanya karma ye pashyel, there is karmam and there is akarmam. What does that mean? It means, for example, let us take it this way. Everyone in this world, when they are working, what happens? When you start doing karma in this world, little by little, this thing builds up inside that I am the doer. You cannot come out of it. I don't think any one of us, I don't know, I know about myself. As soon as you start doing things, you said, oh, I'm doing this. This thought will be very strongly in my mind. And as it grows, as you keep doing the things further and further, you will automatically start thinking, oh, I've done this, what has happened now? The result I want to know, what is the result? So this mentality is in us. Why? That is this what is called karma. And that is the nature of karma. So Krishna is saying here, karman akarma ye pashyel. Akarma means that through examples it is possible to explain this a little easier. Just like, say for example, a father is teaching his son how to write the alphabet. Yeah, so he is holding his son's hand and telling him, write this letter A, B, C. So father is holding the hand and the son is holding the pen in his hand. Father is holding his hand and father is writing on behalf of the son, but training him at the same time how to write the letter A or B. So who is working now? Father is working with his mind and intelligence and his hands. The son is also working, isn't it? Son is learning and doing it with his mind, intelligence and the hand also. So it's a very joint effort together, father and the son together. But what you have to realize that in this world, everything that's happening is like that. We are thinking we are totally independent from everything. For example, when I'm doing something, I'm thinking, who knows, I'll do this, I'll do that, this, that and the other. So many big plans are going through my head. And I'm thinking, I'm the person who controls everything. But Krishna says, no, it's me who controlling you. But we don't know that. This is our problem. We have no realization on that. Why I am doing this, why I am doing that. This you can easily understand. It's not very difficult. I'll tell you why. As soon as you get up in the morning, what happens first thing? You start making the plans, isn't it? For the rest of the day. I have got these things to do. I have to go to London to do this. I go to Manchester to do that. I have so many other plans in my head. Everything comes up. In the sleep, you are not aware of any of these things. But as soon as you got up in the morning, all these activities have come out to you. Now, where did this come from? Where was this storage, this memory was stored? All these things, where was it? Similarly, as soon as the day starts, the function starts, one after the other. Whole day you are busy with something or the other. And sometimes you wonder, why am I doing all these things? But you have no control. You keep doing it. You have no choice. You are working day after day after day. Every one of us, nobody is exception to that. We have so many thoughts in our mind which coming one after the other, and we keep doing day after day the same thing. So Krishna is saying that you may be thinking you are independent, but actually you are not independent. You are controlled by me, and that is called akarma. So Krishna is in that word saying there, karmanya akarma ye pashyel, that when karma is done, that means when we are working in this world, if you are able to see me in that, that means akarma. Akarma is Krishna. Karma means us. Karman akarma ye pashye. When we are executing karma, if you are seeing me, is behind it. Strictly speaking, Krishna is controlling us. I can tell you how. Look at us. We are all working. Why we work in a particular way? Because of the modes of nature. Isn't it? Modes of nature is pushing us. Modes of nature tells a person, get up in the morning, bathe in the morning, chant the holy name, go to the temple, pay your obeisances. That is his modes of nature. Because he has already developed a certain mode of nature. Another person gets up in the morning, catches the tube, goes to the city, work in the factory or offices or wherever it is. So that is also his modes of nature. So modes of nature is controlling all of us. And what is this modes of nature? Modes of nature is nothing but Maya. Maya has three agents. And who controls Maya? Krishna controls Maya. So indirectly, we are controlled by Krishna. Only thing is, we do not recognize it. Isn't it? We do not recognize it. We are thinking, I am totally independent, I am working independently. You may be thinking like that, but Krishna says, no, you are completely under my control. Krishna is controlling us. That's why it says there, karmanya karma ye pashyel. If you are seeing Krishna's hands behind it, then you are seeing it properly. That is why inaction, inaction. Although you are in action, actually it is inaction. Krishna is controlling from behind. That is what the realization has to come from that. Another example. Whole day you are so busy, isn't it? When you go to sleep, the dream starts. Some dreams comes to you in the sleep. Now, have you got any control on your dreams? No one has any control on their dream, have they? No. Somebody else is controlling you through dream at that time. At least at that time, you can recognize that you are controlled. If not during the awakened state. At least in the dream state, you are controlled. Because when dreams comes one after the other, sometimes you are enjoying, sometimes you are suffering in the dream. So what does that mean? It means somebody else is pulling the strings from behind. But even then, we won't recognize. But as soon as you wake up, you come out of the dream, you will say, oh, it is just a dream, I have nothing to do with it. I am busy with my work in this world. This is the difficulty with the Jagrat state. Waken state is the biggest illusion. This delusion comes to us that I am completely independent from Krishna. Whereas in the dream state, at least, you know that you have no control on it. That much you know. That it comes. And where it came from, you don't know. It has come. Somebody is controlling you from somewhere. And that is the way Krishna controls us. That Krishna's controlling is very subtle. And sometimes we don't understand that. We are thinking, because we are so used to thinking ourselves to be this body, an independent entity from Krishna. Completely free from Krishna, completely independent of Krishna. We are always thinking, and this has developed so strongly in us. What happens is, when something happens in this world, immediately we get bewildered. We are thinking, oh, why did this happen? We were not aware of this. And then we fire the weather forecaster or the earthquake forecaster or whatever you call it. We fire everybody. Why did you not know this? Did you not measure it properly? Did he not properly sense it? Poor man does not know that he himself is under the control of somebody else. This is the difficulty. Karmanya karmaye pashyel Akarmanija Karmaya. What is Akarmanija Karmaya? That is also an interesting thing. For example, if you have understood this, that Krishna is controlling during the day while we are in action. Krishna is controlling us. Akarmam. Karmanya akarmaye pashel. If you see Krishna while you are acting in this world with full conscience that Krishna is controlling you and you are functioning in this world because Krishna is controlling you from behind, that is proper understanding. Similarly, akarmanija karmayel. That is also very interesting. Just take for example, in this world, so many things are going on without our knowledge, isn't it? We have no control on that. But we ignore it because it makes it convenient for us. If you ignore it, you don't want to know why it is happening. The sun is coming every morning and leaves every evening. It has its own orbit. It travels wherever it has to stay. It is staying there. The earth is moving in its own orbit. The moon is in its own orbit. So many planets and planetary systems are functioning. Everything on a scheduled basis. Isn't it? Similarly, take for example all the seasons, how changes one after the other. Autumn, winter, and then spring and summer. All the four seasons, sometimes six seasons, sometimes four seasons, whatever it is. The seasons are constantly changing. Who controls them? What control do we have on these things? We can mess it up a little bit by our intelligence. That's what we are normally doing, isn't it? Little bit we can mess it up. But ultimately, it is controlled by Krishna. That is what that means. And everything that is happening in this creation, we are only a very small part of it. The majority of it is under Krishna's control. Even us, we are also controlled by Krishna, but we are not aware of that. We are thinking that we are totally independent, completely independent, very capable, very intelligent, capable of doing anything. What we do not know is that the sun and the moon is also moving according to its karma. That's what is keeping them there in that position, in their orbit. Krishna says this very categorically. Even the sun and the moon are moving according to the laws of karma. That is how powerful that karma is. So such a powerful thing is karma, that it is controlling every living entity in this world to such an extent, but he does not know that he is being controlled like this. This is our problem. For example, as far as Krishna is concerned, in the administration of this universe, many, many things are already decided. And Shastra is giving you information about it. For example, that we all know that in the heavenly planets, Indra is the superior authority there, the head of the demigods there. Now this Indra, who is going to be the next Indra, is already decided. It says there that Mahabali will take over the position of Indra in the next Manu's time. It's already discussed in the Shastra. That is why Shastram is perfect in all these things. Whereas, you don't know Indra, you don't know Mahabali, you don't even know that there is this heavenly planet existing and where there is higher authorities also there, who are much more knowledgeable than us. Similarly, take for example Brahma. This particular Brahma's life is over. Another Brahma is already appointed, who will take over that job next. So such big, big appointments are taken care of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have no control. You are just tiny part of this whole creation. And here, you are trying to understand how this cosmic creation is functioning. And that is where we make the biggest mistake. Because you apply your intelligence and try to understand it, you will never understand it. It is not possible because it is too big for us to comprehend in our conditioned state. You can keep on researching, but it will not get you very far. It will keep you where you will start, get back to where you started. You won't get anywhere. So therefore, Shastram, that is why Vedic literature are saying that this information is available only if you take it from Krishna. Krishna gives you the information, you can have it, otherwise not. But normally what happens is, when we, human society, in this world, we start taking something very seriously, because when there is a little success in this world, in manipulating the material energy, we start thinking, why we are not able to do this? Why we are not able to control this? Why are we not able to control that? All these thoughts start developing inside. So when one such a thing happens, our next desire is to become as knowledgeable as Krishna, isn't it? Krishna is the Supreme Personality who knows everything that is going on in the creation. Not like us. What do we know about it? We know not even 1% of what is in the creation, isn't it? Our information, our understanding and knowledge is so limited compared to the whole creation. And Krishna is Supreme Personality who knows everything about what is going on. But what is our desire? We want to know everything what Krishna knows about it. And that is this bad ambition in us. Once this bad ambition starts, what will happen is, we want to close the gap between us and Krishna. And Krishna says, no, I have to maintain that gap. Because if I allow you to come too close, the next thing what you will do, you want to sit on my head. That's the next mentality in us. It is always there like that, to dominate in us. That is Rajogunam. This Rajogunam will not allow us. And you will keep asking the question, why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why did we not know about it? If it is karma, why Krishna has done that like this? It shouldn't have happened like that. I mean, that means Krishna does not know that this is not good for us. So there itself, the mentality is that we want to get closer to Krishna. And if this distinction between our realizations, our knowledge and Krishna's knowledge, if it closes that gap, then we want to control Krishna. That is the next step in that direction. We want to dominate. And Krishna will not allow us to do that. That is how He controls us. Everyone, every single species in this creation has been given its own position. Prabhupada used to say about this many times in many ways. He used to explain this. He said that you are endeavoring to go into other planets. In different planets you want to travel. Please give up this, he said. It is foolishness. Why? According to the creation itself, Krishna has allocated a place for you to live. And Krishna has told you, you live like this in this place and engage in these activities. He has given you everything. But you, because your false ego won't allow you to accept any authority, you don't want to accept any authority, you start with your mind and intelligence filled with material knowledge, start working in that direction. And then continuously, one after the other, failure. Everything is a failure at the end. The whole life is a failure if it is not used for Krishna consciousness, no matter who it is. At the end of the day, when this finally this body drops off, what do you gain from this? All this so-called technology and knowledge what you have accumulated and created, that will be lying in the books there. But it is no use to anybody. At the end, for your own, one's own benefit, Shastra is saying this, that spiritual life alone is the reality. That is the search after the truth. That is why the sages say, Athado Brahmajnyasa. This is the time to inquire, not any other time. When you get a human body, when you are in a healthy condition, that is the time to inquire after the truth. So that is how karmanya karmaye pashyel akarmanija karmaya. Akarmanija karmaya means when something happens in this world, for example, great disasters happen in this world, like recent times. When these disasters happen, what is our mind telling us? Mind is saying, we blame Krishna. We blame Krishna. And we blame so many other things. We blame others. And sometimes we jump into conclusions also, that why did this happen? And then you start throwing everything into the bin. Start thinking that Bhagavad Gita is wrong, Bhagavadam is wrong, everything is wrong, there is something seriously wrong in this world. But what we do not know is that there is a superior controller above everything, controls everything to what is in his own way, that you do not know. And he will not allow you to know that to that extent, because the mind is such that under the mode of Rajogunam, you do not want to accept that authority. So in order to control, Krishna has his own ways of doing things in this world. That is why sa buddhiman manusheshu, one who is buddhiman, one who is intelligent, he does not think that way. He thinks that everything he is seeing, that controlled by Krishna. I'll give you a few examples. During the Second World War, this was the story Srila Prabhupada has mentioned it, so I will repeat the same thing because it is one of the best examples. There are so many examples to that. That during the Second World War, Prabhupada was in Calcutta. That time, Britain was fighting Japan in the Eastern Front. And Japan was bombing Calcutta very heavily at that time. They have succeeded in reaching up to Calcutta, and they were bombing Calcutta city very heavily. And Prabhupada was at his house, and he knew that the bomb was falling everywhere. Anything could happen, but somehow or the other, it didn't. It killed many people, but still most of the city was saved from the disaster at the end. By then, the other places, the bombing started and they were diverted, and somehow or the other, it didn't have so much damage as it was expected. Now, normally, what would you say in that situation? You will blame the Japanese, isn't it? You'll blame the Japanese. You'll say, oh, the Japanese people, they have come to bomb us like this. They created so much havoc and hell. I'll say, no. Prabhupada didn't say one word about the Japanese. He says, that's Krishna coming down, he says. That was Prabhupada's answer. Krishna is coming down, he said. He says, he kept his ears and listened to when the bombs were throwing on either side. He said, Krishna is throwing the bombs. That is the understanding. He didn't blame the Japanese. Why? Because behind that it is Krishna who is arranging these things to happen. This is perfection of understanding, or proper understanding of karma and akarma. Similarly, when wars happen in this world, so two politicians, they fight each other. One saying that you are wrong, you have done everything wrong. This man says, no, no, you are wrong, you are spying on me. So I'm going to react like this. And they start the fight. And both do not know that there is a superior force controlling both of them from both, like puppets. From both sides they are pulled, the strings are pulled. And this is the reality. Karmanya karmaye pashyel, akarmanija karmaya. Akarmanija karmaya. When you are not doing anything in this world, sometimes things are happening. And then you are bewildered by that. That is that word. Akarmanija karmaya. That karma is done by Krishna. Krishna is doing that and you are bewildered by that. Why? Because you never understood this relationship between karma, yourself and Krishna. Karma is the force that is controlling everybody. And that is very much controlled by Krishna. We are just the tools in Krishna's hands. And we are just doing one day after day everything. And those self-realized souls who have gone over this stage, they are not affected by that. That is why. Sa buddhiman manusheshu. That person is buddhiman, who knows that everything what is happening in this creation is nothing but Krishna's hands in everything. If something good is happening in this world, for example, plenty of food grains, plenty of vegetables, plenty of milk, plenty of food, everything we are getting. Why? Krishna is giving us. Similarly, there is a drought, there is a cyclone, there is so many other disasters happening. Krishna is behind it. Why? Depending on our own relationship with Krishna. What we have done here, if we have accepted, Krishna decides what we deserve and then provides us accordingly. That is the way the laws of karma works. That is why this chapter of Karma Yoga in the Bhagavad Gita is such a close relationship with all of us, all through our life, that we need not get bewildered any time if you take this chapter and read it and think about it. You will see all the time it gives you the answer where things are going wrong. Where things are going wrong. Krishna has given us instructions. As I mentioned before, that we have rejected Shastram. We do not believe in that. We are using our mind as the chariot and we are trying to come into different conclusions on our own way. We cannot control it. We have no control. 24 hours throughout life, we are controlled by Krishna at all times. As I mentioned, the best example, in the dream, you have no control. Out of 24 hours, say you are sleeping 8 hours, maybe 16 hours you are active. Those 8 hours, you have no control. Where is the guarantee that you will come back from the sleep, back to life again? There is no guarantee. Who wakes you up in the morning when you get up? It's Krishna who wakes you up from that deep sleep, bring you back into the wakened state again. Who puts you into that to the sleepy state again? It is Krishna who is doing it. But we are not aware of that. We are thinking that I am so independent. I'll do this, I'll do that. So many illusions in our head. We carry on doing. So as much as this realization comes, that Krishna is controlling us at every second in our life, that is perfection of that understanding. It is not easy to come to that realization. But all the advanced devotees and self-realized persons, they are perfectly situated in this consciousness. You will notice, I can only give you this example, there are many, many others also. Srila Prabhupada also, when he was preaching Krishna consciousness, you could see that all the disciples were tired by about 9 o'clock, by the whole day's program. They'll go into sleep. Prabhupada starts his work at 9 in the night. That's when he started his work. Whole day he had visitors, one after the other coming with their problems. family problems, this problem, that problem, with the disciples as well as the devotees, as well as the people who came to visit him. Visitors like professors or if you look into that science of self-realization. And there are many other books where Prabhupada used to discuss with many other important personalities. Now, when these personalities used to come, great, great people in the material world, they were very well placed in their positions in this world. And they had, with their mind, they have analyzed the problems of this world. They have analyzed the problems of this world. And they were brought in by some devotees to discuss with Srila Prabhupada. So they used to come. And they used to sit with Prabhupada and they used to have some serious discussions about the problems of this world, the what present situation this world. So sometimes they used to raise issues like environmental problems, the overpopulation, and things like that, which they consider as important problems in this world. But in Prabhupada's mind, they were not problems. There were no problems at all. Prabhupada used to make it very clear to them. And they were all convinced also. When they left, Prabhupada handed over the nice plate of prasadam and told them, please understand that behind everything is Krishna. And as much as that understanding comes, all this confusion goes away. But as long as that understanding is not there, this confusion will prevail so strongly that even very highly educated people, they are bewildered by the material nature. That's the nature of the material world. So the answer to all the problems is Krishna consciousness. That's why, but this topic, you can talk about it so long, for so much time, is endless. But in principle, if you understand that Krishna is the controller, we are the controlled. That's all. Karmanya karmaye vashel adarmani jagarmaya sabuddhiman manusheshu sayukta Krishna karmakal. So one who is understood and realized this, he performs his activities in the proper way. Okay. Yasya sarve samarambham kama sankalpa varjita jnanagni karma dharmanam tamahu panditam buddha. So in the next verse, Krishna says, a person who has come to know this, that this is how it is working, yasya sarve samarambham, that he does not unnecessarily endeavor in this world to with big ideas in his head. Yasya sarve samarambha. Why? Kama sankalpa varjidaha. Kamam and sankalpam. Varjidaha. Kama means that desires to have so many things in this world, results from his activities. Like many big people who have gone very high in the material world, you can see how they have regulated their life in this world, how disciplined they were. They had to be, because otherwise, even in the material world, you cannot make it a success unless you are very disciplined in your activities. In order to keep material life, also you need to be very controlled in your habits. Yasya sarve samarambha kama sankalpa varjidaha. Then jnana agni dagda karmanam tamaho panditam buddha. But Krishna says here, if you want to get out of karma, you've got only one thing you can do. That this karma is like a seed. And the seed means it will sprout. As soon as you plant it will sprout. So what do? You have to, the seed which will not sprout is like this. If you fry the seeds in the fire, that seed will not sprout again, isn't it? So what you do, that's why, if you don't want a seed to sprout, you just put it in the fire for some time, take it out, and then put it into the soil, it won't sprout. Why? Because the life is gone from there. So Krishna says here in this verse, yasya sarve samarambha kama sankalpa varjidaha jnana agni sarva karmanam. Have this fire of knowledge in you about this, about karmam. And in the fire of knowledge, if you fry this karmam, then it will not sprout. That is that verse. Jnana agni sarva dagda karmanam tamaho panditam bhaga. All the karmam should become like the seeds which are fried, that which will not sprout again. In the similarly, if you do like that karmam in that way, without any proper with proper understanding, which means I'm not the doer, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not expecting any results in that way, as the karma yogam, if it is executed, then it will not bind you. You see, all the knowledge, ability in a man should be intended for this, how to get out of this entanglement of karma. That is what is required. But if you not learn that, on the other hand, if you have increased your entanglement in this karma cycle, then what have you learned? This is what Krishna is saying there. What have you learned from the Jnanagni Sarvakarmanam Tamahu Panditam Jnanagni Dagdakarmanam Tamahu Panditam Buddha Tektua Karma Phalasangam Nityadrupto Nirashraya Karmanya Vipravarto Vi Nevaginjil Karyodisa. Krishna is explaining our nature. Tektua Karma Phalasangam Nityadrupto Nirashraya. That karma phalasangam, that means the results from the karma. One has to give it up, that desire for the results. And nityadrapto nirashraya, always satisfied. Now, materialists will say to the spiritually inclined people that if you take this attitude, you will never make any progress in your life. That's what they will say. They'll say, if you develop this mentality, how you are going to make progress? And then they will say to people who are not materially very advanced, look, they don't have any ambition. That's why they are suffering like this. And in the middle, something else happens. And then they say that, oh, these people do not know how to look after themselves. And they are so weak. They are not so determined. They are not very capable. All kinds of allegations they make about that. But Krishna is saying, nityadrupto nirashrayam, always satisfied in life. It is necessary. All these things are necessary to advance on the spiritual path. Tektva karma phala sangam nityadrupto nirashrayam karmanyabhi pravrto vi naiva kanchil karyodisam. Then what makes a person very dependent is if he depends on others to live in this world. That's a very sorry state of affairs. When one is very dependent on others to live, naiva kinchil karmanya viprabhrto vi naiva kinchil karyodisam, that if you are dependent on other things to live in this world, the more you give up, the more you become independent. The more you give up, the more you become independent. Whereas our knowledge is, the more you acquire, you become independent. That's how we normally think, isn't it? But Shastra is saying, no, it's not like that. That is why there is a word called aparigraham. Aparigraham means to get rid of things from life. Everything what you find not useful, get rid of it. This is the principle. Sanatana Goswami, when he was going away from the, he wanted to escape from the prison where he was imprisoned by the Chankasi. So he wanted to escape. So he bribed 7 gold coins to the jailer, the jail keeper, whoever was the prison officer, whoever what it is. And then he told him that you tell that you took me for bathing in the river, I got drowned and died. That was the lie he had to say this to him to escape from the prison. So he utilized that because he realized that all this I'm wasting time with this Kasi and with this and that. Rather, I look for Krishna. This is what his mind was very focused in that way. So when he has come to that conclusion, all the other things becomes less important, everything else in this life. When one is very focused in Krishna, wants to advance in Krishna consciousness, other things becomes less important. So you have to give up one after the other things which are not required in life. So in the end, one person was traveling with him as an assistant to help him. At some point, Sanatana Goswami realized he was keeping 1 gold coin with him. He was worried that if I keep this with me, this may become a problem for me, because one day if that man starts getting the idea that Sanatana Goswami has got a gold coin, if I kill him, I can get that gold from him. Rather, the best thing for me, let him have this also, let him go. This is what he said. Isn't it? You know the story. Most of the people have heard the story. What is the lesson from that? The lesson is this, that if you bring too much, accumulate with you everything, you are not independent, you are dependent. You are not independent. Whereas the more you give away and get out of this attachment, that is called aparigraham. Aparigraham is an important. When they went to Vrindavanam, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they were living under the trees, isn't it? They were living under the trees. They didn't require any guard dogs. They didn't require any sentries to look after them. And look at some of our people now. They've gone and built bungalows there. And they built fences all around, and even some of them are maintaining Alsatian dogs to look after themselves. This is how we are, and that is how they were. This is the difference. And that means we are so far away from the reality of spiritual life. We want our difficulty in leaving our material possessions and attachment is so strong that even after going to Vrindavanam, we don't want to throw it away. Not only the here, we want everything, no doubt. We want everything, the latest, everything what is in the market, we want it. But even after going to Vrindavan, we are still thinking, what call can I take it there so that I can make my life comfortable there? I don't miss out anything there also. So what have we learned? What have we learned from this? What was the point in going to Vrindavanam? Why not carry on here without disturbing somebody else there? So this is our problem. This is our problem. Abhigraham, these are things which one should very happily absorb into one's own life. Otherwise spiritual life becomes very difficult. It will go on like this day after day, but at the end of the time of death also you will see where you have started. You will be there itself. There's no changes happen. So in order to press this point, Krishna has expressed it in the Bhagavad Gita that these are not everything. This is not everything. This is only the indication while performing karmam, what is the attitude of a person. And even for a devotee, these things are important to the sense, to the extent that they are principles which guides everyone, whether he is a devotee or a jnani or a yogi or a karmi. It does not matter what it is. Tektva karma phalasangam nityadrupto nirashaya karmanya vipravartobi naivaginjal karyodisam. That purpose is not to increase the many births again and again and increase the karma. On the other hand, the purpose is to reduce it. So that is why one has to become more and more fixed up in the soul, in the spiritual position. If one does not get fixed up in the spiritual position, what will happen is simply the mind will absorb in the material world and simply increase the material needs and material activities. Because every karma has what is called as vasana. That vasana will, you are increasing the vasanas, and once the vasanas increase, it will develop into karma at a later date. Nirashi rachita alma tekta sarva parigraha shariram kevalam karmam kurvannatma hodi kilbisham. That nirashi rachita alma tekta sarva parigraha, that parigraham has to go, that sarva parigraham, that one has to abandon many things in this life in order to advance on the spiritual path. And always thinking, shariram kevalam karmam. It is only the body that has to do this, isn't it? Why is the body doing? Because it's driven from behind by Krishna. That is how it is happening. It is a very difficult realization to come to this. It is not very easy. Because for many, many lifetimes, we have been doing, independent of Krishna's control, we have acted. And even now, we are still acting in that way. And because it is like that, that consciousness is not easy to achieve. And but still the principle is there. Shariram kevalam karmam kurvannatma hodi kilbisham. That why did this different desires come to us? Because we are not fixed up in the spiritual position. That although in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken in very strong words, he has put this point to us that material body is only a temporary coverage. Spiritually, we are a spirit soul. And that is what exactly we are. And many, many verses, Krishna analyzed the body and the soul separately and told us that you are actually spirit soul. But even after knowing that, we are still unable to stay in that position in our consciousness. This is our difficulty. And as long as it is like that, these problems will continue to follow us throughout our life. We will not be able to break away from that. That nirashirajitalma tekta sarva parigraha shariram kevalam karmam kurvannatma hodi kilbisham. That to learn this science, how to be fixed up in the soul, fixed up in spiritual position, that takes training. And that is what Krishna consciousness means. That Prabhupada has explained there that through the process of Krishna consciousness, this attachment to the body, attachment to one's own comforts in this world, attachment to one's own happiness will cease from one's consciousness. And by practicing it, simply by practice, it will develop in such a way that Krishna will become the whole object of love, the whole object of activities, the whole object of everything what this body can use for. So when that happens, then you can say that you are in proper Krishna consciousness. Up to that point, as long as one is making one's own plans and one's own idea and one is trying to fulfill one's own desires and uses Krishna consciousness as a medium for that, then that will not help in the spiritual life. That is not spiritual life. Spiritual life is when one is identifying one's relationship with Krishna and bringing Krishna between his karma and his results. That is why this karma yoga is particularly important. And after this, there is one more verse. Yadra chalaba sandushto dvandadido vimalsara samasiddha siddhauja krutva vina nibhadyate. That under all circumstances, yadra chalaba sandushtam. Sometimes good things will happen in life, sometimes bad things will come. Dvandadido vimalsaraha. That dvandam, this is called dvandam. Dvandam means duality of the material world. Everything, if you look in this world, it's always two, isn't it? Boy and girl, black and white, day and night, heat and cold, happiness and distress, dharma, religious and irreligious. So everything has got two. This whole creation is nothing but a play field of two. So this two has to go. And dvandha dharmam, it is called dvandha dharmam, the two, duality of the material world. When that goes away, yadacha alava sandushtu dvandva adhido vimalsara. If you are free from this dvandvam or duality, you will become free from competition. Why do we feel we have to compete against another person? Because we are seeing this duality in us. We are thinking, oh, he is my competitor, I have to beat him. And he is thinking, I am his competitor, he has to beat me. But unfortunately, neither me nor him understand what our real position is. And that is called a dvandvam, the duality. And from dvandvam comes malsaram. Malsaram means this competing each other. And this competing is a very, very dangerous thing. Because once this competing mentality builds up inside, what will happen is, Krishna says, you will never understand me. You see, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning itself, Krishna says there, dharma prochita kaidavotra paramo. This dharma, religious principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, you can understand. Krishna says, nirmatsaranam satam vedyam. That you have to be nirmatsaram. Nirmatsaram means free from this envy. Free from this envy or competition nature, competing with each other. As long as you have this competition mentality, then Krishna says it's difficult for you to understand the process of Krishna consciousness. Nirmatsaranam satam vedyam. For those who are nirmatsaras, free from envy, they will always understand Krishna consciousness without any difficulty. Vastavam, it is the reality. Atra vastu shivadam, it is the most auspicious thing for the soul. Because this illusion that we are fallen into is what is called in this duality. So one has to come out of this by proper analysis of the dualities of the material world. Vastavam atra vastu shivadam, then tavatrayo unmulanam. That will release you from all this distress. Once you are freed from this duality, tapatrayam, the three kinds of distress also will not affect you. And all these are explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita in a lot more details at different places. Garasangasya muktasya jnanam astita chedasa yajnaya acharata karmam samagram pravilihyadeyam. That actually one who has come to this understanding, Krishna says here, jnanam astita chedasa, that his consciousness is such that completely detached to what he is doing in this world. That because he is fixed up in his spiritual position, therefore, that for him, every activity is nothing but a sacrifice for others. That is the way he will function. He will not see his own happiness to that extent. That is not his prime consideration. That everything what he performs in this world is for the benefit of the world. That is why Brahmanas are given a higher position, because their life was such, they executed their life in this world simply for the benefit of the rest of the world, and therefore Krishna loves them. Krishna gave them the highest position also. Gada sangasya muktasya jnanam avasthita chedasa yajnaya acharata karmam samagram pravilihyate. Therefore Krishna says that everything in the life has to become a yajnam. Yajnam means sacrifice. If life is not a sacrifice, then that life is not worthwhile. That is Krishna's point. It will only entangle you, it will bind you. And eventually, you will lose this gross body. You will lose everything first. Ultimately, you will lose your own body also. And when you lose your body, you will get another body again and continue this whole cycle again. So Krishna says, if you make your life a sacrifice for others, yajnaya acharata karmam samagram pravilihyate, that if it becomes a yajnam, then you can free yourself from this. So I'll stop there because it's 20 to 10. And it's another many more verses which will continue in the next Saturday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.